You are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with your hosts Brian Smith and Anthony Askew, with special guest John Anning. Tonight's episode, Ghost in the Shell, Innocence.
Your life's run down the drain, your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame, Dynamite in the Brain.
Thanks for listening. On today's show, we are talking the 2004 motion picture, Ghost in the Shell 2, Innocence. And joining us tonight to do just that is John Anning.
Hello.
Hello again, John. Yes, this was the promised Ghost in the Shell 2 episode that we discussed when we did our Ghost in the Shell 1 episode. This difference this time is, this is a film I have not seen before.
Uh-huh.
Have any of you seen this before?
Oh,
nope.
Yes.
No.
Oh, no.
This is the first time I watched it the other day.
This was a bad idea.
Did we all watch it the day before we're doing this podcast?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
Everything's fresh in our minds then, right?
That is true, yes. At least the bits which I can remember, which is all the non-lengthy speeches about philosophers.
Oh, the bits I remember. Nothing else but.
I made a bunch of notes. I actually dug up my old notes from the last one, and I was laughing at some of my my comic noticings from the first Ghost in the Shell. My favourites were particularly mullets. Jacking in.
Mullets persists, rather.
Yeah, for sure, I was chuffed.
In fact, if anything, that mullet has got mightier.
But the jacket sleeves have been rolled down.
That is true, and everything seems to have been cleaned up a bit.
Yeah.
But first of all, let's talk about what this film's about. So, it's the year 2032. We're still with Batto. And as IMDb tells me, he's a cyborg detective for the anti-terrorist unit Public Security Section 9. He investigates the case of a female robot, one created solely for sexual pleasure, who slaughtered her owner. IMDb is basically telling you the plot of, like, the first 10 minutes of the film, because it turns into something quite different after that. Because it actually turns out to be a procedural involving the investigation of the murder of Jack Warkson, who worked for a company called Locus Solus, who were the people who made these exploding sex robots.
That could be a film on its own.
When you say that, it sounds really exciting.
And it's directed by Mamoru Oshii and written by Mamoru Oshii and character designed by Hiroyuki Okiura. So that's two of the three main people involved in the first film back again creatively. But we know Katsunori Ito, who wrote the script of the first one, and by the time this film was finished, I was like, boy, I appreciate him a lot more now. I mean, I did sit through a fair chunk of Hack Sign, so that was where I went off him, but seeing Ghost in the Shell without him writing it, I was like, oh, come back, all is forgiven. You two really need to work together again. Because the plot's great.
And oh, it's fine.
I think the plot, the execution of the plot's great, but the dialogue, I don't know about you guys, it's heavy. There's a lot of it, and it doesn't really move the plot along.
There are a lot of existential questions where I get the feeling we're being encouraged to kind of think about, well, everything. Where we come from, why we exist, why we build things like robots and exploding sex robots. Yeah, there were a lot of existential moments I felt. It felt kind of flabby. Like it was being stretched out.
What it felt like to me is that Oshii had an idea about what he wanted to talk about, but rather than talk about it himself, he went and looked up other people who've talked about that in the past and just had his characters quote them.
Yeah. Thanks, Oshii. Thanks for that.
Because it kind of almost seemed like Batto, and we've got back in this film, Togusa.
Togusa.
They're trying to one-up each other with their quotes. It's like, oh, you're quoting that guy. Well, how about this? I laid down this quote on you.
It's so unnecessary. It's so unnecessary.
Yeah, but maybe so that's what...
Sorry, go on, John.
That's what cyber brains are going to bring us. We're all going to, like, know all these quotes by Descartes and all these famous philosophers, and that's all we're going to do. We're just going to, like, quote, out-quote each other all the time.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that is maybe just... it's illustrating that nobody has real knowledge anymore. They're just looking stuff up.
Can you imagine that? Just having a conversation with Wikipedia all the time.
Oh, God.
Constantly asking. They're not asking each other for money, though, so it's not quite like talking to Wikipedia.
One of the problems, though, is, as you said, the story itself is pretty good and it's well executed, but because of all this coding going on, it confuses you. I'm trying to listen to the quote, I'm trying to concentrate on the story, and it just doesn't work. And then if you look at the story broken down, it's like, oh, that's what was going on. That's fine. Why didn't you just leave it at that?
It does explain everything at the end.
It does. It does come to a conclusion, but as it's ongoing, there's times I think, is that a quote, or am I just falling
just waxing lyrical?
Exactly. They're not characters anymore. I understand that is the idea, perhaps, of being a cyborg, and as you say, electronic brain, but still.
I think there's enough character moments in it.
At the start.
As I said to you on Skype last night, I liked the doggy.
That's my favourite new character as well.
Yeah, the dog is great. And obviously Oshii loves Basset Hounds, and the Basset Hound is the most lovingly animated part of the film. Even if we do get shots of its butthole.
Oh, yeah, that would have laid down it. Yeah. I was thinking that's some respectful work there. That's what it says in the script. That's what we're going to animate.
Yes, imagine that on the big screen coming at you.
Coming at you. At least it's clean.
It is.
Which well came first? The corgi in, what was it called?
Cowboy Bebop?
Or this?
Oshii's Basset, I think.
It's Oshii's Basset, because the Basset's in Ghost in the Shell as well.
Ah, okay.
I don't know when he first starts shoving Basset Hounds in things. But yeah, the Basset Hound is his thing.
Okay.
Literally his dog.
All part of the perks.
Yeah.
I'd imagine they are a fun dog to animate because they've got all that, you know, flabs of skin and flabby layers. It's
all that extra dog.
Exactly.
They are a comedic looking dog.
Mm.
And who else? Yeah. Leiji Matsumoto puts his cats in his things, which I think he names his cats the same thing each time, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
But yeah, so I quite enjoyed the plot once because there's no major really for the most of the film, so it's much more like an episode of The Professionals but with cyborgs, because you've got Bodie and Doyle, Barto and Togusa doing their investigation. They are literally Bodie and Doyle, because Barto is the military guy turned investigator, and Togusa's the cop turned investigator.
Uh-huh.
And Aramaki is whatever Gordon Jackson's character was called. Fowley? I think Fowley.
Way before my time, I'm afraid.
I told you before, it's on ITV4 all the time.
I know, but I know that, but I'm not gonna go and watch it.
Get on ITV4. It's on iPlayer, but the ITV version of iPlayer.
I believe that's the ITV player.
That's probably, yes, originally named. Along with loads and loads of episodes of Minder.
Oh, mine is fine.
Bobby Coltrane.
So the main part of the plot is them investigating this murder of Jack Walkson, who worked for this company, Locus Solus, which apparently Wikipedia tells me is another reference to a science fiction story of the same name.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look at the first one.
Yeah, there's lots and lots of references to other science fiction things as well. But as I don't read any science fiction other than Philip K. Dick, and he wasn't referencing Philip K. Dick, it all flew over the top of my head.
So I found it nice that the Major wasn't the central point, because she always felt like the central point of the first film and the TV series, Standalone Complex 2. It was so focused on her and her relationship with Batu and her relationship with guns, her ability to shoot things with them.
Yeah, whereas here we just get Batto's relationship with guns.
Yeah.
And his dog.
And I always think his pulling out guns in two scenes is almost like, we've got to throw in some action scenes into this film. Because they are the last one is necessary, but the one where they just go and murder a load of Yakuza.
That was quite the body count.
It's awesome, though.
It is.
But it is so good. But you're right, it did need something to kind of wake you up. Give you a bit of a kick.
Well, that cybernetic cyborg dude with the red hair and the big moustache, he certainly woke me up.
Is that the one with the huge crab claw?
Yeah, Cybertash and Cyberclaw.
Yeah, because the look of it seems a lot cleaner than the first film. I think that's partly to have the contrast when they go to the northern sector, to the Locus Solus place, to make that bit seem more polluted and dirty.
Yeah, that had more like the atmosphere of the first film.
Yeah.
There were loads of really nice scenes in the first film with kind of like dark neon lit scenes, and it had a real feel to it. And that was really missing until they got to the core.
Yeah, it was like a yellow smog.
Yeah, smoggy.
Yeah, it's like the north side of Grimsby.
Is that what it looked
but
like?
With more parades. There's not as many parades in the north side of Grimsby. but I did actually quite like that it was cleaner. So it did seem like, oh, maybe things have moved on a bit. So it's become a little bit more civilized, at least in the places where they live. And it also seemed a little less science fictiony as well. So the science fiction bits felt more like your realistic expectations for 2032 in 2004.
Speaking of the technology, there's at least in the opening part of the film, when you see all the GUI, GUI, whatever, however you want to phrase it, it's all got this weird orange light to it. And I am sure, because there's an Adobe After Effects effect that may have come out around a very similar time called Shine by Trapcode or something. And I am sure they use that, just YouTube Trapcode Shine, and I am sure they use that effect constantly. That's, I noticed that.
We have discussed this on podcast before. Yes, you can kind of sometimes tell the age
at the time
of something from what the digital look of it is.
I mean, it looks good. It would hurt your eyes after a couple of hours sitting watching that, but,
Yeah, there's the CG is kind of weirdly used. It's kind of used for occasional solid items, as well as like the helicopters with the bird wings. It's also used for packets of dog food and packets of cigarettes.
Maybe that's how they're made in the future. Not CGI, but they're so rigid, you know. Everything's very, very boxy and smooth.
It's all printed by 3D printers.
Low resolution ones.
Yeah, that's maybe why Ishikawa was telling him to buy dry dog food, really. Not because it was going to be a trap, but because the wet dog food he was buying was made out of computer stuff. Ishikawa seems to have lost weight as well.
Has he?
I'm sure he either looks younger or less heavy. But maybe I'm mixing up his design from the standalone.
It's his hair. It's all about the hair in standalone. Aramaki's hair is huge. Not in this. So I'm pleased they toned it down a little bit.
Yeah. Barto looks smaller in this. In terms of bulk. He still looks huge.
He's more human-like. In terms of more believable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's more of a surprise when his arm breaks out into a load of cannons.
Oh, that bit's great.
Does he look older? Have they tried to make the characters look distinctly older? I can't even remember when the first film was supposed to take place. 2032, it isn't.
That is a good question.
Togus's mullet's longer, so it's obviously
a couple of weeks later.
Yeah. And the Major does show up in the form of just her ghost now. She appears to live in the cloud.
Oh, no.
But thankfully, no one was saying that in 2004. So.
Oh, thank God. But I work in IT, and I hate the concept of... I hate the idea of people talking about the cloud, because the people just don't understand what it is.
I've lost a file. Is it in the cloud?
Do you know what? That bloody film with Cameron Diaz, is it? That is just the most backwards representation. I can't believe that has been released to critical acclaim. People think that's really funny.
Which film?
Sex tape.
I don't think that's been released to critical acclaim, to be honest.
Really? Oh, I thought people were saying it's really funny.
Maybe.
Is that about... Oh, that is... Yes.
Maybe in Germany. It's currently got 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What did Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocent get?
I guarantee it's higher than 70.
I was going to say, because on the cover it's got glowing reviews.
The After Effects.
It is the most impressive anime ever, according to the Daily Record, and a dazzling spectacle, according to Empire, And according to themselves, it's from the creators of Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. Which is a pretty big stretch.
Uh-huh.
Studio Ghibli were involved in producing it, but it's a bit of a stretch to say from the creators of. But they wouldn't be the first people to do that sort of thing. It's like when the people put on from the producers of. You're kind of like, well.
He was there one day of shooting.
Yes.
He signed off
on these things. No creative input, just sign the appropriate documents. Do you find out what Ghost in the Shell Innocence did on Rotten Tomatoes?
64%.
Ah.
That sounds
it's still,
right.
Yeah, it's probably.
So I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. Because I'd heard that it got very heavily philosophical. And
it
I was,
does.
It does, but I was expecting it to be even heavier.
Well, it's because we've seen that short film.
That is true. Everything is in perspective of, what was it called? Limit Break or something?
I think it was Limit Break, yeah.
From Genius Party.
15 minutes of quotes and, well, not even quotes, it's its own wording, I think.
Yeah, this was fucking, yeah, Ghost in the Shell 2's crank compared to that. Limit Cycle.
You were close enough for my like.
Yeah, it broke us.
Crikey.
Yeah, that was the thing when we saw that and we were like, as much as I love Genius Party, I'd never want to see it in the cinema because I don't want to be stuck for those 15 minutes again watching that short film.
Remembering that you need the toilet and it's not exciting enough to take your brain off it. That's my ethos.
Moving on. Before this becomes yet another pile onto Limit Cycle podcast.
What do you think about the scene where, when I first seen the film on DVD years back, I thought the disc was skipping. You know where it plays the scene back?
Oh, the bit in Kim's mansion.
Yeah. I mean, it's so obvious that it's not now, but at the time, I think I was probably really tired and I was like, oh, the disc has gone back. But it obviously doesn't. I love that bit.
Yes, I do as well. That's the bit which reminded me of Yusai Tsura, Beautiful Dreamer. With the repeating day from that.
Yeah.
But did either of you spot that it was the Major almost immediately laying the cards out in front? Yeah, that was kind of obvious, wasn't it?
It was, but I didn't get the clues because I'm not as clever as Batar.
Because you don't have a cybernetic brain.
You can access Wikipedia on tap in the cloud. Did you see the big twist, though? That the Major was actually the Basset Hound all along. That was a shell. Now, that would have been a good twist. That would have been good.
But no, I did like the... I like the fact that they explained everything at the end. Because I was kind of expecting it not to. I mean, because I've seen Angel's Egg. which refused to explain anything along the way. I thought, oh, it's going to be so deep into the philosophy. We've had that scene with Kim. Is he going to do some sort of final loop and make you question everything? But no, it has a small girl explain everything to Batar.
And it's a genuinely good little story. I think they could have done it in an episode of Standalone Complex. It wouldn't have been half as good, but I think it's a solid, you know, reason to be investigating, and it's a good payoff, I think. I like the closing scenes with the gunfights, and it's good. They are creepy dolls.
I have one point about that. I mean, these locus solar security guys, the armed guards in this kind of secret base or whatever it was, they weren't particularly prepared, were they? I mean, they're guarding what? Hundreds, thousands of these robots which have the capability of cutting people up, that sort of thing. And they see one down a corridor and like five of them all fall over each other and shoot the walls.
That's true.
To be fair though, they are guys, they've got to board a ship and to be taken into international waters to commit illegal operations. These may just be the best people they can get.
The most naive.
I was very anxious at one point where Batar references that Togus's family might be a fake memory. I was like, oh no, that would have been a very depressing end if that had turned out to be the case. You know, like the guy in the first film who was just looking at a photograph of himself and a Basset Hound. That would have been sad.
Yeah, well, thankfully, cyber brains being hacked, that kicked off again, and Batar got his brain hacked.
Yeah, that was, I like that scene as well.
That was a good bit as well.
Because that did make you wonder, because you were seeing it from his point of view.
Mm-hmm. And you do hear the Major's voice as he walks into the shop. Or at least I presume it's the Major.
Yeah, I assume so.
I forget what's said, but be careful or something to that effect.
But luckily they were following him. Because they don't, they don't trust Battelle enough to look after himself, apparently.
Which is strange, because he's a big guy. Yes, he could have caused some big problems. If he'd have got let loose in that store, there would have been a big death count.
But I think it's just like Ishikawa was kind of characterized as being the most sensible of the team, isn't he? Because he's the one who never goes into the actual field.
Mm.
He's normally sitting there in his big computer back at base. But yeah, it's worth seeking out. It's currently on Amazon for get two Blu-rays for £10, which is how I got it.
Looks good on Blu-ray.
It does, yeah.
It's a nice little film.
And otherwise it's reasonably priced at £11.59. I mean, I prefer it to Standalone Complex.
Just because you can watch it in 90 minutes.
That's correct, yes.
Which is a more than valid point. That is, yeah.
But Standalone Complex, I enjoy Standalone Complex more, I think, because I watch it for a different reason. I think it's more turn your brain off, just watch to enjoy in shorter chunks.
I mean, I like the episodes you can do that with in Standalone Complex. It's the ongoing story bit I don't like in Standalone.
Well, see, that's what I love. I love the whole Laughing Man scenario. I think that's great.
There's no half an hour of people talking in the chat room in Ghost in the Shell Innocence.
It's true.
And it's only 98 minutes, which is also...
There's a point in the film I was like, oh wow, this is going over really, really quick. And then it doesn't drag, but you realise, oh actually no, it's not. But 95 minutes, 98 minutes, it's nothing.
Yeah, and for all the talk we've said about there being a lot of philosophical back and forth, I bet if you went and counted how many minutes there were of it, that wasn't a particularly large chunk of it. It just seems to be able to slow down time when they do it.
It makes you think, man.
I would like to have a deep read into it one day, but you can just watch it for the fun.
Yeah, don't get too involved in the ethics.
Yeah.
What the bad people were doing and...
All these e-brains being hacked. Just enjoy it for Bato mowing down Yakuza in that one scene.
And then getting stroppy at the end when they finally rescue the little girl and they tell her off for causing the deaths of all those robots. You think, hey?
It wasn't her.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the guy who got murdered, his murder they were investigating. Because he'd tampered with them. But yeah, it was... I like that it had a realistic in inverted commas explanation to everything.
Oh, it does, yeah.
That it wasn't going to just be like, oh, these robots have somehow gained sentience on their own. There was an actual evil plot behind it.
Quite a dark story, really, the whole sex side of it all. Not nice, not nice.
Well, they are bad guys. They are operating in international waters.
Mm. Big
and
telltale
nothing
sign.
Good happens in international waters.
How dodgy does that bird look? The one that flies right up to the camera, shall we say. You see its eye. That looks dodgy CG. That's the only dodgy CG in the film, I thought.
I mean, you can tell the CG's aged, but...
See, I don't think it looks too bad, because... As you say, there's bits that have it that don't necessarily need it.
I think
it's
more the textures
works.
On the CG than the animation of the CG. I think the animation's fine. But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's probably trying to say something with the bits where he gets ridiculously detailed on packaging and stuff. But that, the bird helicopter design looks good in sort of when it's trying to look like a bird. In like a silhouette. But I think the opening shots of it and then the shots later on with it flying side on, those were the bits where I thought, oh, it does look sort of early 2000s. Perhaps just from the texture.
Yeah.
More than anything.
I imagine some of the CG may have been for cost and time-saving reasons. So I wonder if the digital animators were paid less than the actual cell animators.
I don't know. There's a few digital zooms as well I saw, but I don't think they... When the first go to... I can't think now. One crime scene where they're walking up some stairs and they're going along a walkway, and there's an obvious digital zoom rather than an animated zoom.
Don't like those digital zooms.
Well, yeah, I think it's just because it's these characters and that not being in the first film. None of that sort of stuff being in the first film that stands out more in this one. But, yeah.
You like the first film?
Yeah. Definitely. It's some more of it. Unless your favourite thing was the Major. In which case you might not want to watch this.
Yeah, because the first hour and a half she's not in it.
And when she is in it at the end, as she admits, it's only a tiny portion of herself, which is because the bandwidth wasn't wide enough. There wasn't enough space on the hard drive to install her entire personality.
Yeah. But Batto's there. Everybody, if you like the Major, you definitely like Batto.
Everybody loves Batto's cake. Batto or Gatto? I remember the game.
No, yeah, it's a different game this time. And that's a good segue to my game. Righty-ho, let's find my game in my Google Drives, because I'm now actually saving them so I can reuse them at a later date.
Is your storage space large enough to hold them all? Or you let the Major trying to...
I haven't sorted the old ones, just the ones from this year.
Okay.
So I was realising I was just writing them and letting them disappear. And A, I couldn't reuse them, say, at a convention at some point. And B, I couldn't remember whether I'd done any of these quizzes before.
That's the most important.
Having said that, would you remember?
Oh, my memory is terrible. I have the worst memory.
Okay, so we're going to play a game called Anime TV Cops.
Oh, crikey.
So, obviously in Ghost in the Shell, you've got a pairing of Batto and Togusa. Are a duo. So I'm going to give you other anime cop duos. And all you have to do is tell me what show they come from.
Uh-huh.
So we'll start with John.
Okay.
Mihoshi Kuramitsu and Kioni Makabe.
Mihoshi and Kioni. God. I'm pretty sure I've watched that show.
You definitely have, yes.
But it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Spalding far, far away.
That's far enough, mate.
Well, it's for you, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. She had a squeaky voice. It's gone.
Anthony, do you know?
It's not
Tenshi Muyo,
is it?
It is Tenshi Muyo, John.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I was not about to say that.
Awesome. I'm proud of my old brain.
Okay, Anthony.
Yes.
John Sleepy Estes and Daisaburo Eddie Ban.
Is that two people?
That's two people. John Sleepy Estes, so it's John Estes, his nickname's Sleepy, and Daisaburo Ban, his nickname's Eddie.
Is it Heat Guy J?
It's not.
Oh.
I could have included those. So that's a clue that Heat Guy J is not any of the answers
to this. Ah, damn it.
Do you know, John?
I have no idea.
Madball 34.
Okay.
Okay. Back
is that
to
good?
You.
They've got cool names.
They do. Back to you, John.
Okay.
Kay and Yuri.
Oh, that's a dirty pair, isn't it?
That is correct.
Oh, good. Two for two.
Okay, Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
Natsumi Sugimoto and Miyuki Kobayakawa. Natsumi Sugimoto and Miyuki Kobayakawa. Natsumi and Miyuki.
Is it noir?
No, they're not cops.
Oh, well.
John.
I have no idea.
You are under arrest.
Hold!
Ah, I never watched that.
It's good. Damn it.
Okay, John. Noah Azumi and Alphonse.
Noah Azumi and Alphonse. Well, that's... Azumi and Alphonse. It's not Full Metal Alchemist.
No.
No. That's the only person, that's the only show I can think of.
I thought the same straight away, and then, it's like, no, they're not cops.
Azzy, you know. Who knows?
Say their names again, please.
Noah Azumi and Alphonse. They're a partnership in a anime cop show.
I thought you were going to give a good clue there. I'll pass.
Pat Labor.
Oh, Alphonse, of course. God, I used to watch Pat Labor with you years ago.
Okay, Anthony. Inferno Cop and Hellfire Boy.
Inferno Cop.
That is correct.
Very easy one.
John. Leona Ozaki and Bonaparte.
Leona and Bonaparte. That's ringing a bell as well. Is there a prize?
There's not a prize, no.
That's another, Shiro thing, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Dominion Tank Police.
That is correct.
Oh, cool!
Damn it, I was gonna get that one. I was staying so quiet. Give no clues.
That is the name of her tank.
Ah, cool.
Okay, Anthony. Mm-hmm. Natsuki Sasahara and, a deep breath from Brian here. I really should have practiced saying this. Sakura Boku Seiin Monzeninari. Sakura Boku Seiin Monzeninari.
What's the first person?
Natsuki Sasahara. I think that might be where our friend Sash gets his nickname from.
Oh, is this?
Yes.
Are there two females?
They are, yes. They are two police women.
Pass.
John, do you know?
I have no idea. I'm
Hyper
just trying to
police.
Imagine. Ah, okay. I'm trying to imagine Sash saying that last name in his accent. That would have been funny.
And last one for you, John.
Okay.
Leon McNichol and Daily Wong.
Oh, Leon and Daily. Is that Bubblegum Crisis?
You are correct.
Hey!
Well done, John.
Sweet.
Well done.
Thank you.
And last one for you, Anthony. Mm-hmm. It's just your pride you're playing for now.
Oh, that was lost long ago.
Keiichi Ikari and Mitsuhiro Maniwa.
We've done this recently.
We have, yes.
Right. This year?
In the last 12 months we've done it.
Oh. God, that could be anything.
Over multiple weeks.
Aha! Paranoid Agent.
You are correct.
Yes! I'm the worst person with Japanese names. That's why I never remember anyone's name. I can pick a voice actor out just by that's that guy's voice, that kind of thing, but.
That's why you're okay with Inferno Cop and Hellfire Boy. You remember which show they came from.
Exactly. Oh, please put that one.
One day you'll get a cyber brain, mate. Everything will be fine then. Wikipedia on hand.
Okay, you're the winner, John. 4 points to 2.
Yoo-hoo!
Dredging up all his memories.
God.
Doubting your own memory, I'm telling you. Righty-ho. And that is the end of the podcast. Anything you want to plug, John?
No, you can find me on Twitter at Astromoose. If you want to look at hipster pictures of whiskey, beer and cake, you can look me up on Instagram, also at Astromoose. Yeah, that's about it.
Anthony, anything you want to plug?
Just my Twitter, which is AntAskew, and that's all. I'm empty.
Okay, I might as well plug it. I've not plugged it for a couple of weeks, and that is my Tumblr, linkinparkintheendamv.tumblr.com, where I post every day a AMV featuring the Linkin Park song In the End. And I will continue doing this until I run out of Linkin Park songs.
That's going to be Linkin never, Park.
Videos. No, look, John, I've explained this on the podcast before. So at the moment, there's never been more than six a week. So eventually, I'm going to run out.
And then your little special corner of the internet.
Mathematically, I'm going to run out eventually.
Oh, God.
See, although there's six a week being made, think about all the old ones that you've missed.
Well, I'm going to catch up eventually. I'll just fill in the extra, because when there's not enough, I fill in with some of the old ones.
I see.
Are you like plotting that six a week? Because what if there's like peaks and troughs? What if one week, like, I don't know, 15 get made?
Well, then I might be in trouble.
You'll look for that when they're touring, or, you know, when they bring out like a new greatest hits album or something like that.
What's worrying is people are trying to encourage me to do ones for other songs on Twitter. So you should do it for, because I joked that someone should set up a rival one for Numb, because when I'm searching, there's often loads for Linkin Park's Numb at the same as well. And then someone said I should do a Nickelback song. No, just, there is only one song that belongs in AMVs, and that is Linkin Park's In the End. No other song belongs in AMVs. That is it. Everything else is a pretender. And there's at least two other bands who have songs called In the End, which people make AMVs out of, which is also confusing. And so I comment on YouTube about this, and then people get angry at me.
Don't get with that lot.
Let me see if I can find my comments. Oh, I've got to go to my...
But you should be proud of yourself, Ryan, because that is exactly what Tumblr is for. It is for that kind of thing. It is for strange music videos of all the same.
Yeah, weird single topic.
Yeah. Like, my favourite one was pictures of, like, Vargas girls from the 50s with Robert Downey Jr.'s face.
What?
Of course.
Somebody's taken, like, I don't know, dozens of pictures of, like, 50s kind of, like, pin-up girls, you know, with their, like, hair pinned up and stuff, and then just put a very fitting picture of Robert Downey Jr.'s face over their face.
He does have a very effeminate face.
With his beard and that, yeah.
Oh, he's got a beard. Well,
yeah. It's a very effeminate beard.
Okay, it's fine. Okay, yeah. So my original comment was, hang on, let me just find my comments on this. It was a Tokyo Ghoul video from, I don't know, the Square Root of A. Apparently that's the name of a band, or the Annex. Apparently they're called. So I posted, why would you make an AMV and waste your time using a song called In the End that wasn't Linkin Park's?
You said this, yeah.
I said that, yes. And then somebody said, why would you waste your time making a comment hating on a good AMV maker? You probably can't even create an AMV close to his, so shut the fuck up. Just because it says In the End doesn't mean it's Linkin Park. I mean, is he all you listen to? So then I replied, yes, I only watch AMVs that feature the hit song In the End by Linkin Park. Why would you watch any AMV that didn't? AMVs that use Linkin Park's masterpiece, open brackets, the song In the End, close brackets, represent the pinnacle of the art form, and that is why there are so many of them. So, to which they replied, okay, yes, Linkin Park is good and all, but you really got mad and being an asshole because what a song that you expected wasn't in the video. Come on, dude. And then someone else replied, you know, over songs can be called In the End.
It's just
said
like
the 12-year-old boy.
Hey, we don't know how old /swarm/ is. To be honest, from his profile pic, his picture on YouTube, he may be a dog. So,
well, the bassist animal.
Maybe it's the major.
He's a pug. It appears to be a pug who is on the YouTube commenting on videos.
That's a recipe for danger. A pug on YouTube.
That is true. And seems to like Minecraft and AMVs.
Now, so on the subject of the future and everything, before we sign up, you heard about this crazy Microsoft announcement, the holographic goggles project.
No. Sort of,
or the Ghost in the Shell, you've not heard about that. Oh, it's mad. They've basically brought out a video with this new product, which appears to be what everybody thought Google Glass would have been. A pair of like glasses which you wear, which project holograms onto your eyes.
Ooh.
Yeah, there was the bit of JoJo's news that I couldn't understand seemed to have something to do with something similar.
They call it the HoloLens. Yeah, it's an interesting looking thing. When you mentioned Minecraft, there's a video and they show someone playing Minecraft in their living room, as in their living room. They have built their house on their coffee table, and there's like a big castle on the sofa, and they like flick a creeper and he falls down a hole, and then he stands up and looks down the hole and he sees the creeper falling down the hole. It's
So how does that work with people who need glasses or have got astigmatism?
Well, they'll either get a headache or there'll be some kind of special version where you can wear prescription sunglasses with it. It's quite a big, you look like a bit of a pillock wearing it at the moment with the the headset. But it's an interesting direction for them to take it. It's taken the idea of augmented reality, and actually seems to be delivering it so far.
What's the price tag on these babies?
Oh God, no one knows yet. They've just announced the technology. They've just sort of said developers can sign up and figure out how to like make, I don't know, Netflix appear on the wall.
But how they approach the really important question of making your Yu-Gi-Oh cards come alive.
More than likely.
That would get me back in the game.
That is what the current Yu-Gi-Oh series is about. It's about augmented reality Yu-Gi-Oh.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe the Microsoft execs were watching it and they were like, hey, that's what we're going to do next. Screw Office.
Just got to believe in the heart of the cards.
Indeed.
Give people eye cancer with dangerous glasses. Rightio. Yeah, and also on Twitter, @awesome_engine, where I am in total 2D. Don't have to worry about me coming alive. Because that would be terrible. Augmented reality Twitter. You can bet people would do. Same people. It's like the same people who use TwitLonger would want augmented reality.
Oh, they're the worst people.
They are the worst people in the world. People who use TwitLonger. Mm. Why are you even on Twitter?
Just make another tweet. If it's that important, just break it into a separate. If you told someone it's too long, just break it into two tweets.
Get a blog.
Send an email to all your friends with whatever you wanted to tweet.
Because when Twitter went after TwitPic, I was crossing my fingers that we were going to go after TwitLonger next.
I'd forgotten TwitLonger was a thing. I think I've erased all people from my friends list who use it. That's probably why I've forgotten about it.
I can only think of one person who uses it on my friends list, and they're an occasional guest on this podcast.
Okay, so. Better not bad-mouthing too much then.
I'm going to start long-tweeting. If there's an act, it's definitely long tweeting. Could do one tonight. Where do you get it? Do you have to download it, or do you just sign up? Or?
I don't know what you have to do.
I imagine you have to sign up. It'll be like an API access thing where it asks you for your Twitter login details and then promises to save them somewhere safe.
Oh, definitely not. My Twitter's bad enough without some 12-year-old YouTuber getting a hold of it and whining.
There you can be like a celebrity and claim your Twitter was hacked when you just badmouth people.
Oh God, that's an easy way. Easy way out. I don't badmouth anyone. Too nice.
That's because you're a nice guy.
We just save it for after the podcast.
Yeah.
Or during the bits when Dwayne's internet connection is cutting out.
Oh, I don't say anything bad about
it. No, I didn't. I'm talking about me on the last JoJo's episode.
Oh, right. Oh,
all
yes.
The stuff I was assuring you I was going to cut out.
You did.
And then Niall was saying, oh, I've got a recording of it as well. I could put it in the uncut version out.
There'd be hell on.
Well, it wouldn't be, because none of those people are going to listen to an anime podcast about JoJo's. Anyway, as always, you can find this podcast on dynamiteinthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain, on Stitcher, on player.fm, and of course on iTunes. So want to subscribe to one of those many subscription tools. Write us a review on there, if there is the option to write a review. And then more people will be able to find out about the cyberpunks that are Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye! Down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the Brain.